Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 75 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on the International Forecaster right after this. You know, in 1970, the world food supply was 73 days for every man, woman, and child on the planet. Today, it's down to less than 38 days. Now, we produce grain for export, but then we import grapes from Chile, tomatoes from Mexico, and berries from Guatemala. Our food supply here in the United States is in the hands of foreigners and multinational corporations who support this global 2000 population reduction program. Now, globalization may be good for business, but globalization is not good for you and it's not good for me. Back in 1940, we all had a pantry full of food to feed our families for a full year. Today, we Americans have a 3-day supply in our refrigerators, and we believe in our supermarket system of just-in-time delivery to feed us all. Now, over the past 60 years or so, we've traded a 1-year food supply for 3 days. Do you think that's very wise? And these global 2000 mad scientists, philosophers, preachers, and politicians plan to use famine, plague, disease, and pestilence to reduce the Earth's population by 90% over the next 50 years, or so says the Club of Rome. And these evil madmen with their global 2000 genocide agenda have a cause that they're willing to die for. And I say, let them die for their cause. But let you and I live for ours. Now, if you'd like to learn more, why don't you call and order my free General Law CD package? That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's educational, it's informative, it's entertaining. Best of all, it's free of charge. You can call and order yours right now. The number is 417-273-4967. And remember, the Subsistence and Survival School is also available on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you're online, you can go to the website. It's georgegordon.org. Just click onto the email machine and send an email request for that free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, last time we were going through the International Forecaster. It's published by Bob Chapman. Bob Chapman is located at Post Office Box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida, 33951. Again, that's the International Forecaster. Post Office Box 510-518, Punta, P-U-N-T-A, Gorda, G-O-R-D-A, Florida, 33951. This is the February number one issue. It's volume 9, number 2-1. We were up to number 37. Now, I pointed out that Chapman's newsletter is unique in that he covers a wide variety of news, economics, politics, you name it, he covers it. Not all economic newsletters newsletters in general cover as wide a variety of information as does Chapman. Every one of these newsletters is unique. Every one is different. Everyone that writes a newsletter is an entrepreneur. He's a businessman. He's a businessman who makes his living buying, selling, and trading. He sells a newsletter. He invests in stocks and bonds, gold and silver. One of the least common denominators that I find with all of these newsletter writers, at least the conservative writers, is that they all subscribe to hard money. I don't know of any exceptions to that rule. Hard money in America today, and I imagine probably where you live around the world, is a rare commodity. Not very many people practice gold and silver coin or use commodities. And that's because everybody has been attuned to paper money, commercial paper, stocks and bonds, mortgages. They're interested in profit and gain rather than property and increase. And of course, they all pay income tax and social security taxes, and then they complain loudly about government interference in their lives. Government confiscation of their property, their money, regulation in their jobs and their businesses. Well, let's take a look here at number 37, retail sales forecast. Here's what the international forecaster tells us. The National Federation of Retailers say total sales in 2005 will be up 3.5% versus a gain of 6.7% in 2004. Higher interest rates and slowing home refinancing will limit customers' budgets, and we see no gain in hiring and very little gain in the way of wage increases. I might point out that there has been no real wage increase benefit since 1973. You're earning more dollars, but you haven't made any gain in your standard of living. Number 38 is Fannie Mae. Fannie Mae just cannot fund mortgages fast enough. ARMs, A-R-M-S, now take up 33% of mortgages and 48% of refinances. That's 81%. The rest are 15 and 30-year fixed mortgages. Now Fannie Mae is testing a 40-year mortgage using 21 federally insured credit unions as guinea pigs. The 40-year mortgage allows a person to buy more house for the money, but the equity build, it takes a lot longer. It also reduces principal payments. The downside for adding 10 years to the loan results in the homebuyer paying more than $100,000 in extra interest. The idea for pushing the 40-year mortgage is borrowing more money to drive home prices even higher. I might point out the rule of 72. Let me just put in a little editorial comment here. The rule of 72, take 72 and divide that by the interest rate. So for the interest rate's 5%, it takes 14.4 years to double. So if you've got a 10-year mortgage, you went out and you borrowed $50,000 for 10 years. At 5% interest. Well, let's try 14.4 years. That'd be just about a 15-year mortgage. You're going to buy one house for you and one house for the banker. Now, take that out to 30 years. You're going to buy one house for you and two for the banker. Take that out to 45 years. It's going to be one house for you and three for the banker. Now, isn't that just special? All right, Iraq war forecast, number 39. We want Allied troops removed from Iraq, but that's not going to happen. Victory and a democratic outcome are no longer achievable. The departure from Iraq would destroy the credibility of the United States and the United Kingdom, and by default give victory to the Al-Qaeda and Muslim extremists. Iraqi oil would then fall into the hands of the Sunnis and the Shiites, who would then have a civil war to see who would control the oil and the country. The United States would lose control of Iraqi oil, and a revolution would probably then begin in Saudi Arabia, cutting off a major portion of U.S. oil. You can now see what a serious situation that the neocons have gotten us into, and we may eventually not be able to change the situation without capturing the entire Middle East and occupying the entire region indefinitely. That would mean all of our young people would serve in our military for a long time. We then would have to deal with Muslims all over the world, and there are about a billion of them to deal with. The situation would demand massive amounts of U.S. and United Kingdom troops, at least 100,000 more, plus another 500,000 for the invasion of Iran, and another 100,000 for the occupation of Saudi Arabia. And that's just for starters. Now, that's 700,000 more troops plus 3 men or women in support. Thus, we're talking 2.1 million warm bodies. We, of course, would have a draft. We might get another 50,000 troops from Britain, but that's about all we're going to get from them. All of the other allies do not want to participate in a long occupation when 80% of their citizens are dead set against it. We have to increase our military force in Iraq now by 100,000 or we're going to be defeated. Failing those decisions, we will be cut off from Middle Eastern oil. Oil will be denominated in euros, and our financial system would collapse, ending the hedge money of the Anglo-American alliance in the region for good. Now, that's why that lunatic with the 91 IQ in the White House has to go for it. It is all or nothing at this point in time. Number 40, Europe in turmoil. Europe, in spite of having oil in euros, will be in financial and economic turmoil because their socialist Marxist governments would collapse, particularly in Germany. All U.S. and U.K. military would have been withdrawn from Europe. Europe would end up with a dictatorial government or fly apart into its original separate pieces. The economy of the entire world would have collapsed. The United Kingdom and the United States cannot win. And the question is, how bad will the damage be? The United States and United Kingdom have to increase troop commitments now or lose. There can be no good end militarily. And that's because the elitists who run our government now are Satanists. And whether we like it or not, we're entering a horrible period of war. And our president has said that he will not commit to significantly reducing troop strength by the end of the second term in 2009. Number 41, the Fed repo pool. Fannie Mae just cannot fund mortgages fast enough. On Wednesday, 1-19-05, the Fed added $5.5 billion in repurchase agreements, putting the repo pool at $67.8 billion. Now, the pool is starting to show weakness, which means bad news is on the way, and the Fed has decided not to stand in front of all of the bad news that's coming down. Now, this is telling for those expecting an inauguration rally. A normal drop would be back to a Dow of 10,000. If war in Iraq is extended and more troops are added, or if we move against Iran or Syria, the Dow will probably drop to around 8,500. More than half of the people surveyed in the BBC World Service poll say that the re-election of George Bush has made the world more dangerous. Only India, Poland, and the Philippines believe that the world was safer under Bush. 47% see the influence of the United States around the world as largely negative and view Americans negatively as well. None of the countries contributing their troops to Iraq. And this is certainly a grim picture. Turkey topped the anti-Bush list at 82% negative. That's 82% of the people in Turkey have a negative view of the United States and George Bush, and it was followed by Argentina with 79% negative and Brazil with 78%. Americans let George and the neocons get away with creating this Iraq war. Enough people now know that Bush is doing, or what he's doing, in regard to Iran, and they should put a stop to him. Iran has done nothing to warrant an invasion. Iran is in full compliance with the Nuclear Non-Proliferation Treaty. It has been inspected over and over, and the inspectors have found nothing. The elitist media is determined to assist George Bush in his invasion along with an assist from the neocon Pearl. That's Richard Pearl. We cannot allow these people to invade Iran. Number 44, tax rebellion. A senior tax rebellion has broken out in Clark County, Nevada. According to the senior citizen newspaper, the Vegas Voice, 863 individuals have protested skyrocketing assessed valuations. A 6% cap for seniors has been recommended for annual increases. Proposed property tax caps or freezes have evolved into a centerpiece issue for 2005 legislation. If real estate prices rise further, you can expect real trouble. This week, our president told U.S. troops that much more will be asked of you in Iraq and elsewhere as the inauguration costing over $150 million gets underway. George Bush continues to play the terrorism tune, and half of the gullible American public believes him. Now, officially, consumer prices rose 3.3% last year. It's the biggest increase in 4 years. Energy costs rose 16.6%. Now, if you believe that, you have the same IQ as George Herbert Walker Bush and George W. Bush. That's 98 and 91 respectively. Now, what he's talking about there is the inflation rate at 3.3%. I don't know about you, but when you take a look at energy costs, the price of gasoline went up more than 3.3%. Electricity and other energy costs went up more than 3.3%, along with automobiles, food, and a whole host and plethora of other items. But you see, the government figures the inflation rate with what they call the Consumer Price Index, which is a manipulated shopping basket. They go out and they buy these same items every month, and then they have an adjustment that they figure in so as to tell you that the inflation rate is lower than it really is. All you have to do is go out and figure, well, what were you paying for electricity? What were you paying for your telephone? What were you paying for your car payments, mortgage payments, and etc.? Why don't you take a look at that over the last 5 years, and that'll tell you what the inflation rate is for you. The inflation rate for you is, well, what are you paying for today? And are those items that you're paying for today the same as, more than, or less than you were paying last year, the year before, or 5 years ago? Then figure out your own inflation rate instead of letting the government figure it out for you. He goes on to say, officially consumer prices rose 3.3% last year. Energy costs rose 16%. Well, for the week ending 1/14/04, mortgage applications rose 16.2%. Refinancing accounted for about 50% of mortgage volume. That's off from 49% the previous week. ARMS rose from 32.7 to 32.8, and the 30-year fixed mortgage fell to 5.64%, and the 15-year to 5.14%. That's down from 5.7 and 5.17, respectively. 1 year ARMS adjustable rate mortgages averaged 4.13%. That's down from 4.16%. Now, keep in mind that we've got a problem looming. If you went out and refinanced your house and you reduced the interest rate from 8% to 5%, that's great. Whatever the reduction was saved you money. Now, what did you do with the refinance money that you took out of the house? Did you use that to pay down on the mortgage? That is, did you use that for something constructive, or did you go out and buy a new SUV? And when you bought the SUV, did you buy it and pay cash for it, or did you go make a down payment on it so that you could put a swimming pool in the backyard? Because when the housing bubble breaks, the value of your house, remember, you had $100,000 equity in your house, and somebody told you your house was worth $200,000, so you went out and borrowed another $70,000 on the house, spent the $70,000, now you got a $170,000 mortgage, and when the bubble breaks and the value of the house drops to $150,000, $140,000, $130,000, or back to $100,000, You're going to have a $100,000 house or a $150,000 house with a $170,000 or $75,000 mortgage on it. Then here's another kicker. Did you get a fixed rate mortgage or is it adjustable? If it's adjustable, as the interest rates go up, which they're bound to do, then the monthly payment that you're making is going to go up, or did you get a balloon payment at the end of the program? Let me share a little something with you here on a balloon payment. The wife came in the other day and she said there's a piece of real estate for sale down the road over here for $195,000. And she said it's got a $93,000 balloon payment that's due in about 36 months. The owner wants to sell and he's in a hurry to sell. Yeah, I can understand why. Because you see, here you are at the top, at the peak of the real estate bubble. This piece of property is now sitting there at $193,000. That's the top end price. When the real estate bubble breaks, it's going to go down to about, or lose about $100,000 of its value, which is going to take it down to the $93,000 balloon payment. You see, the balloon payment at the end, if you read that, here's what it says. The lender is saying to you, I'm going to loan you what this thing is worth, but I'm not going to loan it to you over a long period of time. And he puts the balloon payment on there. So when this guy borrowed the money, he borrowed $100,000. He took a $93,000 balloon payment at the end. The property was really worth $100,000. Now, how many people have $93,000 tucked away that they can pick up that $93,000 balloon payment? Well, you see, only the bank's got that kind of money. So this guy is sitting on a piece of distressed property. That's what the bottom line is. It's distressed, and he's at the top of the real estate bubble, and he can't sell it. How do you like that? And that's because the bank is not going to lend $193,000 on it. They're going to lend what it's really worth, and that's about $100,000. So anytime you see a piece of property with a balloon payment on it, the lender is sending you a subliminal message that this property is overpriced, overvalued. All right, what else have we got here? Number 48. Let's talk about interest rates. Even to the unsophisticated, low interest rates cannot be sustained very much longer. A normalization of rates is appropriate and very likely. This poses major risks to stock, bond, and real estate markets. Since 2001, rates have fallen 5.5% by the Federal Reserve's actions, and the rest of the world has tagged along for the ride. Japan, which is in a depression, has zero rates. That's right. The interest rates in Japan are down near zero. They just print and give money away. In real terms, the European Central Bank is at zero as well and has expanded M3 at 4.5% over the past 3.5 years. Now, last year, the Fed increased 6.3%, and the 3.5-year expansion is about 12%. China increased their M2 money supply at a 16.5% rate. These expansions reflect the need for growth and as well to offset a deflationary pull. U.S. monetary policy is the most accommodative since the late 1970s when inflation raged and the price of gold was on its way to $850 an ounce. Now, adjusted for inflation, the yield on the 10-year Treasury note is less than 1%, even though the instrument yields 4.2%. That's if you're using the CPI figure of 9.5%, and then you deduct the 4.20 yield, you lose an annualized 5.3%. So if you're buying these Treasury bills, 10-year Treasury bills, you put $1,000 down on the bill, they're going to pay you 4.2% interest. then you got to figure in the inflation rate. What you're losing here is about
5%.
Now, this is called good economics. This is what you learn in college. It's what you people that invest in stocks and bonds do. You go to college, you get a degree, you come out and you get a job. Now, you're working at your job, you take your money, you buy stocks, you buy bonds, and you can't calculate the real rate of inflation. Now, when these newsletter writers are telling you about the real rates of inflation, what they're doing is they're figuring, what does it cost me when I go down to the grocery store and buy things? What does it cost me when I go into the restaurant compared to what it cost me last year? Now, most of these newsletter writers have credit cards, and they keep pretty copious records. They're number nuts. And when I'm talking to one on the phone like a Franklin Sanders, you know, and we're talking about inflation or the Magombo guru or something like that, what he's doing is he goes back and he looks at what he was spending 5 years ago or 10 years ago on his credit card when he went to the restaurant. And then he extrapolates that forward and he says, well, what's it costing me now when I go out to the Olive Garden? What are they charging me now as compared to last year, year before, and 5 years ago? What was I paying on the telephone bill last year? What was I paying on the power bill? How much was gasoline last year? And all of those records, most of you people have that. You've got your credit card. You could figure that out. That is, if you really wanted to know. Now, I suspect that you're probably afraid to find out. And the government tells you it's 3.3%, when in reality, it's more like 10 to 15%. That's where reality's at. And the reason that we can tell you that is because that's how fast they're printing new money. I mean, think about it. If you take a look at the amount of money in circulation back in 1987, it was about $3.5 trillion, 2009 trillion. And today it's, today it's $9 trillion. 2000, it had doubled, a little bit more than doubled. And today it's $9 trillion, and they're heading for, this is what their goal is, they're going to put $13.5 trillion worth of dollars into circulation, they hope, by the end of this year. The end of 2005. Well, now, in 1987 dollars, if you got $3.5 trillion in circulation and you double that to $7, it makes the dollar worth 50 cents. You know, by the time you double that $7 to 13.5, which is going to be about $14 trillion, it's going to make the 1987 dollar worth a quarter, isn't it? You know, this isn't rocket science. Now, do you really want to go through that kind of inflation? I mean, you know, it's up to you. But if you think inflation is your friend, you got another guess coming. Inflation is your enemy. And so is debt. And that's what he's telling you here. Now, this is a situation that cannot continue. Asset-based economies are nothing more than a leveraged play on low real interest rates. Foreigners eager to get in on the action have caused a massive surge of foreign capital inflows into dollar-denominated securities, and that has helped the Fed keep interest rates down. You could call it foreign subsidization. At the same time, these foreign inflows have kept foreign currencies from appreciating against the dollar. The low interest rates create an extreme state of imbalance that currently exists in the world economy. These low rates have totally inhibited savings, which means that America must import $2.4 billion a day just to keep from sinking financially. The result is foolish lending by foreigners, as well as U.S. institutions, which has given us an insurmountable current credit deficit. The budget deficit at $630 billion is out of sight, as are household debt loads, which are colossal. This debt and deficits can only be maintained at current interest rates. If rates increase just 1.75% this year, then there will be some serious problems. If rates rise 2 to 3%, it's going to be a disaster. Our Federal Reserve has created this monstrosity. And the name, or in the name of price stability. They wanted full employment. They wanted sustained economic growth. Now, starting next month, the Fed is going to start to deal with this problem by way of higher interest rates. This change in economic and financial direction will have a very profound effect on the markets. Bonds, stocks, and real estate are all going to fall, and the refinancing of homes will end for the consumer who cannot now live on his income. It will not take much to change things. At these low interest rates, any change to the upside will be very sensitive and have major implications. The rates have to rise to protect the dollar and bring in the $2.4 billion a day. At the same time, it will raise havoc with the economy. There will be no balance or normalization for some time to come. And the Fed is in a box, and there is no painless escape. Now, this has been going on, boys and girls, since the turn of the century. And we've been enamored with paper money since we created the Federal Reserve Bank back in 1913. We went through our first depression as a result of it in 1922, a second bigger depression in the 1930s. We've had a number of recessions from that point on, and every time they keep pulling the fat out of the fire. They keep pulling the fat out of the fire. Are they going to pull the fat out of the fire one more time? Is this going to work? Well, I don't know. I'm sitting here on the sidelines. I'm not going to take that kind of risk, but if you want to, get after it. Now, most Americans have never lived through a depression, have never lived without shoes, never been concerned about whether we're going to bed tonight with beans and cornbread or a glass of water. And as long as the world continues on like this, you people are going to be all right. But if it ever turns upside down, which is the inevitable consequences of the Social Security Ponzi scheme or these insane monetary policies that we've been following for the last 100 years, and especially since FDR and the New Deal and Fair Deal of the 1930s and 40s, there's going to be a lot of weeping and wailing and gnashing of teeth. Well, let's take a quick break here. Let me give you a caveat, and we'll come back and we'll take a look at number 49 here, pension funds. Keep in mind that the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events from the scriptural perspective, and we do that 7 days a week. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief. The Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to the authors and publications used on this program. And we often endorse and we recommend books, periodicals, papers, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements or recommendations that we give do not mean that the authors or publications so endorsed or recommended are going to reciprocate. Most of the authors and publications that we cite on the Law Hour are political, religious, economic, sectarian, they're racial or they're ethnic partisans, whose viewpoint is not endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review necessarily, and vice versa. Now, the opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of the network, or of this radio station. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please go to the website georgegordon.org or call the Law School Direct 417-273-4967. Again, that's georgegordon.org or call Direct 417-273-4967. And we're reviewing the International Forecaster. Remember, the International Forecaster is published by a guy by the name of Bob Chapman. He's been around for a long, long time. I don't know exactly how long. I think I read in one of his newsletters here 46 years. That tells you a little something about him. If he's been around for 46 years, his customers have to be happy and satisfied with him or he'd be out of business. It's just that simple. An entrepreneur has to have happy, satisfied customers, otherwise he's out of business. So he's been around for 46 years. He's, as you can tell, his politics are pretty well right of center. And that doesn't mean he's a Republican. He may be a Democrat. I can't tell. He seems to be in favor of Social Security. I don't know if he is or not. He should have done the arithmetic on Social Security and concluded that it was a Ponzi scheme, but I don't know what his politics are. I don't get into the politics of various writers, per se. But I do know that he suggests that you get out of debt, get out of stocks and bonds, unload your real estate that you can't hang on to. Now, if you've got a piece of real estate that's free and clear, that means that all you have to do is pay the taxes on it. You need to be prepared for your taxes to double. And then double the next year, and then double the year after that. In Virginia, right after the Civil War, the carpetbaggers came into the Virginia legislature, and they took the tax rates of 1865. And they doubled those in 1866. And then in 1867, they doubled them again. Then in 1868, they reversed them back to the 1865 low. The purpose for that exercise was to divorce all of the landowners from their land, and they did that. Or most of them. You can imagine that right after the Civil War, those people were broke. They had Confederate dollars in their pockets. And now the taxes have to be paid in Yankee dollars, and they don't have any. So you need to be prepared, and so around here we took a look at our taxes and we said, okay, here it is, the year 2005, we paid our taxes last December, and so this coming December we'll have to pay our 2005 taxes, so we got that money in a pile. And when this thing turns turtle, Ozark County is going to have more money. And the only way for them to get it is to double the taxes, and they'll do that. So in 2006 our taxes will double. So I got to have that money put in a pile. Then in 2007, they're going to double it again. So I better have that money in a pile. And then just to make sure, I better have 2008 doubled again. And then about 2009, when the reality of the world comes back, they'll lower it back to about the 2005 rate or lower, and then we'll be back to normal again. And these kinds of things go on in cycles, just like war. They run about 3 to 5 years. So you better be prepared for about 5 years. If you're not, you'll just be another victim like everybody else. Taking a look at pension funds here, was number 49. Company pension funds do two different calculations on pensions. One tells employees that they have earned, or what they have earned, and the other tells the employees how large the pension liability is. This discrepancy in accounting may be about to change. The FASB, that's the Financial Accounting Standards Board, wants to change that so that the real liability is shown. That could increase pension liabilities in some companies by 30% or more. And this could jolt to the shareholders and the bottom line. The money missing from the pension account is being used by management to make money for the corporation. Under those circumstances, companies will cut back their plans, and some will convert or close their plans. We believe soon pensions will become something of the past. The FASB proposal will come by the end of March. 50. Former Republican vice presidential candidate and New York Congressman Jack Kemp has been interrogated by the FBI in the oil for food scandal. He faces scrutiny about his dealings with Virginia-based oil trader Samar Vincent, who has been formally charged with criminal wrongdoing in the $21.3 billion global scandal. Vincent acted as Saddam Hussein's agent in the United States. He had monthly meetings with Kemp to discuss U.S.-Iraq relations. Interestingly enough, when Kemp checked Vincent out, he asked Frank Carlucci. Carlucci was the former head of the Carlyle Group. That's the Bush Carlyle Group, and what he thought of Vincent. Vincent is Carlucci's tennis partner, and he told Kemp that Vincent was a good guy. Vincent pleaded guilty to tax fraud, failing to register as a foreign agent, and for violating a government ban on doing business with Iraq. Vincent was paid $3 to $5 million by Saddam Hussein from 1992 to 2003. And under the Sarbanes-Oxley Act, restatement of financial reports were up 28% in 2004. Under internal control reviews, companies have had to spend an average of $5 million each to comply. GE said that it cost them $30 million to comply. Here's number 51, statistics. In the first 8 days of trading in 2005, less than $2 billion flowed into U.S. equity funds. In all of January of 2003, $44 billion flowed in. It was an all-time high. Now, that sure does not bode well for the market. Joe Investor could be tapped out. In the months of October and November, total consumer fuel expenditures leaped 8.3% of wage and salary income. It's the highest energy burden since 1990. Now, the current persistent oil shock is the third largest of five events that has occurred since the early 1970s. Much of this increase in U.S. industrial production is surging utility output, which is due in good measure to increasing inflation. Now, those monstrous homes that are being built are gobbling up lots of electricity and gas. Utility industrial production has increased 2.7% in December. The investor is out of cash. All of his assets are already tied up in stocks and real estate, and he has a giant mortgage to pay. If he has an ARM, he must be trembling at the thought that interest rates are headed higher. Goodness forbids that he gets a hold of a copy of the International Forecaster and then reads it or hears one of our radio programs. The truth would probably kill him. Now, the problem is that 90% of the people alive today do not have any conception whatsoever of what a depression is like because they never had a bad day in their lives. The Federal Reserve Bank of New York, the index, which offers the first clues as to the performance of U.S. manufacturing, in the month dropped to 20 from 27 in December. Now, that's a very precipitous drop in spite of a 25% lower dollar. Exports fell last year, suggesting falling overseas growth is worsening. The index of expectations for the next 6 months dropped to 42 from 47, and economists forecast the general index would slow from 30 to 25 in January. New orders for manufacturers index fell to 21 from 36, and the index of new orders in January was 39% compared to 46% in December. Now, the gauge of the number of employees fell to 13 from 16. The hiring index was little changed. Prices paid for materials dropped to 13 from 16. The index of sales fell to 26 from 36. The index of expected prices paid 6 months ahead fell to 55.5 from 62.5. The measure of inventories in the current index dropped to negative 11 from 1.92, and that's very bad. Fannie Mae cut its quarterly dividend in half to 26 cents a share. Let's take a look at gold, silver, platinum, palladium, and diamonds, number 52, precious metals. In the first 8 days of the year, Street Tracks Gold Trust added 47 tons of gold to its gold holdings. Now, that's about half of the gold accumulated by the ETF between its launch and the end of 2004. The ETF added 3 times last year's total sales, or they added 3 times last year's total sales of United States Gold Eagle coins, or more than 1,500 tons on an annualized basis. Now that is, of course, if they're holding the gold. We have no way of telling because it cannot be audited. So we assume that they are using derivatives. The ETF's initial public offering never ends, so restrictions do exist. Agnico Eagle and Crystalex have been beat down on their great guys and their great buys. Gold Corp's merger with Wheaton River is a great one. So buy whatever is cheapest to get into the play. Mawson Resources may have some excellent drill holes coming and may do or be doing another financing to carry it into firming up on an ore body. Toomey Resources is a strong silver play. Clifton Mining has registered a new patent and its partner has raised lots of money for drilling. Coins are insurance, and the truth of the matter is there are some excellent buys out there. After Ted Butler's report last week, you have to be wild about silver. The next move will be to $10 to $12 an ounce and then to $15. The steel in the category is unquestionably 90% bags of U.S. silver, dimes, quarters, and half dollars. They have the lowest amount of premium over spot, and we believe 95% of them have been melted, and thus, in the future, they could very well become semi-numismatic. You can buy them for under 50 cents an ounce over the spot price. That's an extraordinary value. You do not have to buy a bag. You can buy one half and quarter bags also. The 1 ounce American Silver Eagles cost a little more, but they have held their premium over the past 20 years. In the semi-numismatics, American Peace Dollar Rolls in Mint State 60, Brilliant Uncirculated, are also a best buy. When peace dollars move, it's in heaps and bounds. The last time silver was over $10, they almost tripled. The older Morgans and peace dollars in higher grades, MS64, 65, and 66, are in great demand. And it is always smart to have American Eagles, Canadian Maple Leafs, Austrian Philharmonics, and South African Krugerrands in different denominations for security and barter. In numismatics, our dear friend is the U.S. $20 St. Gaudens. Actually, there are better buys in the XFAU Saints and Liberties. Other values on the spec sides are $20 St. Gaudens MS63, $20 Liberties MS63, $10 Liberties MS63, and $10 Indians MS63. And remember, gold and silver coins are for a lifetime. Number 53 deals with interest rates and their increases. Late last week, we saw the Fed governor of St. Louis, the Federal Reserve President Poole, say that the Fed may accelerate interest rate increases. This announcement was staged and then manipulated by the Fed and the plunge protection team to send the dollar a cent higher versus the euro. Now, knock gold off $2.20 and then to move the market higher just before a holiday weekend. Number 54, gold shares. We're often asked, how did gold shares do just before and during the Great Depression? Let's use Homestake Mining Company as an example. In the 8-year period from January 1927 through December 1934, Homestake Mining went up every year. In 1927, it rose 15%. In 1928, it went up 8%. In 1929, 3%. And in 1930, 2.7%. And when it became obvious that there was not going to be an immediate recovery, the shares took off in 1931. They went up 59%. And as the flight to quality began, in 1932 they climbed 17%, in 1933, 150%, and in 1934, 29%. Now, the stock market fell all of those 8 years except in 1927, 1928, 1930, and 1933, and those gains were small. In 1933, the Dow was up 133%, yet home stake appreciated 150%, which shows you in a bear market, gold shares go up, and even when the Dow had a great year in 1933, home stake did even better. Now, that should prove to you that gold shares will appreciate in inflationary circumstances and in deflationary times as well. In 1935, the Depression was still raging, and had not we had the Second World War, it might have been years before we had a healthy recovery. If you had invested $1,000 in the Dow at the beginning of 1927, by the end of 1934, you would have had $1,056. $1,000 invested in Homestake Mining would have rewarded you with $7,968. Now, that gain is extraordinary because the dollar gained 60% in its value over that same period. Thus, the purchasing power was more than double that $7,968. Number 55, the silver inventory. Silver inventory fell again, and it is closing in on that 100 million ounce figure. Last week it fell 606,000 ounces to 102,658,000 ounces. Number 56, auto sales in India. Auto sales in India rose in December 20% from 2003. Utility vehicle sales rose 40%, and motorcycle sales were up 51%, and they all use silver in the manufacturing process. Whenever the suppression of gold prices by the cartel gets difficult, they call out their propaganda machine. This time, it is the United Kingdom Chancellor of the Exchequer, Gordon Brown, the same as our Treasury Secretary here. He was yammering about plans for the International Monetary Fund to sell gold to be used to finance debt relief of the world's 70 poorest countries. Now, the last time that they did this was in the late 1970s. After the sale was made, gold headed straight for $850 an ounce and never looked back. Here's a little trick for you to keep in mind. Whenever they want to control the price of gold as it's going up, they will announce that there is a gold sale. For instance, Austria announced a gold sale of, I think it was it 80 million ounces? Something on that order. And they did indeed sell it. They sold it to France. So the Central Bank of Austria sells 80 million ounces or $80 million or something to France. Then pretty soon the French Central Bank sells 80 million ounces to Germany. And then pretty soon the German Central Bank sells 80 million ounces to Austria. The gold goes around in a circle. It never gets out here to the general public. But on the news that there's going to be that sell or that sale, people look at that and they say, well, the price of gold is going to go down. And it does. It goes down every time. But it's not supply and demand. It's not that there's more supply out there in the marketplace. It's the propaganda value of holding the sale. And these central banks work together. Now remember, central banks sell paper money. Now, if you take all the gold that's out there in the world today, the physical gold, the gold that I hold in my pocket and you hold in your pocket. And then you take all of the gold that's promised, that's all the paper that's out there, it will take all of the mining production for 15 years to pay off all that paper. And silver is even worse. And the difference is there's more ounces of gold out in the marketplace to buy and sell than there is silver out in the marketplace. That's why silver is such a phenomenal buy. Now, it's been hammered for years, and it's been manipulated. But one of these days, it'll break out, and when it does, there'll be tons of profit to be made. That's for the people that own the physical silver. For all of you people that own pieces of paper out there, you're not going to get paid. You're not going to get your silver, and you're not going to get paid for it. So, always take physical possession of your gold and silver. Now, Mr. Brown has suggested that part of the proceeds, some $12 million, would be used to write off debt. Well, guess what the $12 billion goes to? The Western bankers, of course, as a bailout of unpayable debt. Loans that should never have been made in the first place. Of all of the supporters, Trevor Manuel, South African finance minister, who's a Marxist with his phony degree, said that it was very necessary. Now, this, as mining in South Africa becomes more and more uneconomical. South Africa still produces about 15% of the world's gold output and is still the world's top producer. So they stand to lose the most if such a sale were actually to take place. Poverty cannot be defeated with money, only with hard work. We lived in Africa for 3 years and employed 300 Africans, and getting them to work was very difficult. Just to show you what a dimwit Manuel is, he said that he was not against selling the IMF's gold reserves as long as this was managed so as to avoid swings in the price. The only way that can be done is by fixing the price. That's called price controls. We've done it before, and we can do it again, and we shall do it again. But as a major gold producer, we want to take part in the regulations to ensure the price is managed. He called for IMF precedence of sales over those of countries. The concept of selling gold and buying it back is new. It's never been presented before, and how it would work if approved, we have no idea. The bottom line really is the price of gold would be substantially higher if the central banks were not rigging the price. This would be of enormous help to the poor of Africa. There's no question that the gold price is rigged for the benefit of the elitists who really rule the world. Even if 3,000 tons of IMF gold were sold, it would be readily absorbed. In addition, who knows whether it has already has been sold, and this action is to balance the books. Well, I'm about out of time. That's the international forecaster. Remember, you can, why don't you just write and ask for a sample copy. I'm sure he'll send you one. See, when you get a sample copy, read it for yourself and see if it's what you're looking for or what you can use. I always recommend to my students that they subscribe to at least two of these newsletters. Remember, you can get the Kitco report free. This one is $129. It's Post Office Box 510-518, Punta Gorda, Florida, 33951. All right, we're about out of time. We're going to have to cut it off right here. You've been listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States, worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to our webpage. That's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. The Law Hour is carried worldwide over the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. Well, there's the signal, says our time is up. We've got to leave it right there. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, good night, friends.